Good morning. I do enjoy these Sundays when we can not let a barrier like language keep us apart from one another. There's so many things we can divide on a day like today versus who you're going to vote for on the Super Bowl to win or whether or not you think curling is a real sport. There's a million things we could argue about today, but today we join our voices together to lift up our praise to the same God that holds us all in unity. And so if you want to not hear anything else today, just know that that's what I want you to take away from today, is how important it is for us, while the world is dividing over everything, to unify around the one thing that matters most. Last week, if you were here with us in English, we read the Beatitudes, the beginning of the Sermon on the Mount. This week, we're going to be reading the words that come immediately after, Matthew 5, 13 through 20. Last week, Jesus gathered a crowd on a hillside and began not with demands, with blessing. He looked at a people who did not feel particularly strong or successful, people who were poor in spirit, people who mourned, people who were gentle, hungry for righteousness, and he called them blessed because the kingdom of heaven had drawn near to them. Before they did anything, before they proved anything, Jesus spoke a word over them, blessed. Matthew does not cut away to a different scene after that moment. He doesn't change the audience. The very next thing Jesus does is keep talking to that same group of people, that same group of very ordinary, normal, not so impressive people. Disciples, onlookers, the hopeful, the hurting, and he tells them who they are in this world. Most of us are used to thinking of our faith as something that happens mostly inside. It's privatized. Our faith is our faith. It's between me and God. It's in my heart. They're my beliefs. It's my private life. We live in a culture that treats religion as a personal preference, something that we tuck away, something that can be kept quiet out of sight. Everybody has a personal religious opinion, and we just prefer everybody to keep those away from everyone else. That's kind of how we prefer this. We prefer our faith to be private. It's into that world and into that way of thinking that Jesus speaks words that are stunningly public. He does not give his followers a private spirituality to keep them comfortable. He gives them an identity that is meant to be noticed. The word of the Lord from the Gospel of Matthew chapter 5, beginning in verse 13. You are the salt of the earth, but if salt has lost its taste, how can its saltiness be restored? It is no longer good for anything, but it is thrown out and trampled underfoot. You are the light of the world. A city built on a hill cannot be hid. No one, after lighting a lamp, puts it under the bushel basket, but on a lampstand, and it gives light to all in the house. In the same way, let your light shine before others, so that they may see your good works and give glory to your Father in heaven. Do not think that I've come to abolish the law or the prophets. I've come not to abolish, but to fulfill. For truly I tell you, until heaven and earth pass away, not one letter, not one stroke of a letter will pass from the law until all is accomplished. Therefore, whoever breaks one of the least of these commandments and teaches others to do the same will be called least in the kingdom of heaven. But whoever does them and teaches them will be called great in the kingdom of heaven. For I tell you, unless your righteousness exceeds that of the scribes and Pharisees, you will never enter the kingdom of heaven. There's something exhilarating, but something also intimidating in these words. You are salt of the earth, you are light of the world. A city on a hill cannot be hid. That sounds big. It sounds important. It sounds significant. it sounds like Jesus thinks that what God is doing in this group of people actually matters for the world around them. But there's this harder edge to it. This salt can lose its taste, light can be hidden under a basket talk. Righteousness must somehow exceed that of the most religious people anyone knew at the time. It's not hard to imagine what begins to stir inside of us when we hear that. We might think, I don't feel very salty today, or I don't feel particularly bright. Most days, my life feels pretty ordinary. We might hear Jesus say that our righteousness has to exceed that of the Pharisees and think that if that's the standard, there's no way I measure up. And we live with that tension. We feel the gap between how Jesus speaks about his followers and how we often feel about ourselves. We may even look at the life of our congregation and wonder if we shine as much as we should, or if our impact is as visible as we would like it to be. And at the same time, a line like, "You are the light of the world," just feels huge. It's easy to hear it and quietly think, that can't really mean me, or I'm not that bright, or not that important. But remember who is in front of Jesus when he sits and says these words. Who are the people at the very beginning of this journey who are still learning, still uncertain? They're not the powerful. They're the poor. They're not the satisfied. They're the hungry. They're not those who are comforted. These are those who are mourning. These are the salt and light of the world. These tell us that these words are meant to encourage and dignify, not to crush you with a weighty burden. So before we rush to what we think we should go out and do, we need to ask a different kind of question. What kind of God talks this way? What does Jesus think he's doing when he looks at a group of ordinary people and calls them salt and light? The first thing to notice is the way that Jesus speaks. He does not say, if you try hard enough, you could become the salt of the earth. He does not say, one day you might be the light of the world. He says, you are. These disciples who are just getting started with Jesus already are salt and light. Not by doing something different, but by what they already are, who they already are, what they're already doing. He's naming what they already are because God's kingdom has come near to them. That's what makes them salt and light. The second thing to notice is that the "you" here is plural. My Texan is showing. I firmly think that we need a translation of the Bible that has the "you" plural translated as "y'all." It needs to be there. Your English Bibles don't do this well. English is terrible at keeping the "y'all" in there. It's "y'all." This is a plural. He's not talking to an individual. This is not a group of superhero Christians who are better at it than everybody else. He's talking to y'all, a gathered people, a community. Salt does its work not grain by grain, but together in a dish. Light does not work as one single ray, but as a lamp filling a whole room. A city on a hill is not one impressive building. It is many small lights seen together. When Jesus says, y'all are the light of the world, he is not placing the whole responsibility of God's mission on one person's shoulders. This is not about you. This is about the community, the people of God. He is telling a community that together your life bears witness to what God is like. And even that line about the righteousness exceeding the scribes and Pharisees, this is not a call to do more religious things, or to be more religious, or to be better. The scribes and Pharisees were experts at rule-keeping. They were really good at the external performance side of religion. Jesus is inviting his followers into something deeper than that, a deeper righteousness, a life more fully aligned with God's heart. God cares about justice, mercy, humility, generosity, truth. Exceeding the righteousness of the scribes and Pharisees is not about piling on more religious activities. It's about letting God's character shape the whole life of the community. One of the ways we can actually see that happening, one of the ways we can see our salt and light, is by looking at how this congregational life of ours is ordered and shared. This is part of why today we're doing something a little bit different. We're sharing an updated leadership chart. One, because if you've been tracking the leadership chart, you know how long it's been since it's been updated, and so it needs to be updated. You can see it on the screen, I hope. There's also copies in the back at the table, right in the back in the middle. There's copies in English and in Spanish. You need to know a few things about this document. One, it is not finished. It's a living document. It'll never be finished. It is probably full of lots of mistakes and errors that I have made, and I need you to tell me which ones they are so that I can fix it. So please, this is one of those rare times in which if you enjoy pointing out somebody else's mistakes, you're encouraged to do so. Tell me all the things I got wrong, and we'll keep it up to date as best we can. I need to talk to you a little bit about this chart. On the surface, it looks like an organizational document, because it is. There's names, there's roles, there's lines of responsibility, but underneath the lines and titles is something else. This document is a snapshot of how the light of Christ is already being shared through the life of this church. That's what this is. At the top, you can see the list of elders, Lloyd and Lance, charged with shepherding the flock, praying, watching over the health and direction of our life together. There are deacons and ministry coordinators and ministry directors and acronyms and names and people who, in very concrete ways, are helping our worship, our spiritual formation, our missions, our benevolence, our communications. But helping all of those things come together in a way that reflects this light of Christ to be salt to the world around us. You'll see names you know. You'll see areas where ministry is strong and ongoing. And you'll also see some open spaces marked vacant, places where there is room for light to shine. This chart is not meant to be a scoreboard. It's meant to be a testimony. It says, here are the many ways that Christ is already at work among us. Here are the places where he has entrusted his church with real responsibilities. Here is what it looks like in one congregation for salt and light to take a concrete shape. And if we let Jesus' words stand, and if we take this leadership chart as a picture of our shared life, rather than as a list of demands, we can begin to ask a different kind of question. Not, are we doing enough, but what kind of light is already visible here? And where is God inviting that light to grow? There's already a lot of light in this church. Every time we support partners in Honduras, El Salvador, South Florida, Nicaragua, Nigeria, Madagascar, every time we pray and give and send and encourage, there's light. Every time the Agape Trust steps in to help somebody in the deepest of needs, every time refugees are welcomed and supported, every time food is shared and needs are met, this chart is tracking that light. In spiritual formation, every class that is prepared, every small group that gathers, every child who is taught, every Sunday our worship is planned and led. Every moment our AV team makes it possible for us to hear and see and even in multiple languages at the same time. These are all the ways the light of Christ is made visible here. In the meeting house, this building itself and the grounds around it, the people who clean it, the care for the lawn, the parking lot, the fact that you had parking spaces to park your car in because the snow had been moved. The heat is working and has been working this entire Arctic storm. All of that is light. Some of it's literal salt. And most of this goes unseen. So at first glance, I need you to look at this chart and at the very least, look at and see at all the things that are being done that is spreading light and salt. There are also places where there's light ready to grow, where we see particular opportunities. One such cluster of opportunities is engagement. Engagement includes things like visitor services, welcome new congregants, planning special events, following up with people who might otherwise slip through the cracks, coordinating potlucks, organizing the kitchen, helping us care for one another with meals and prayer when someone is sick or struggling. You're going to see lots of spots marked vacant on this sheet. What you're not going to do is look at people who you thought used to be doing those things and wonder why they stopped. Don't do that. I'll tell you why they stopped. Because this church is an odd duck of a thing. I don't know if you know this or not. This church is a bit of a rotating, revolving door. There are always people coming and going for lots of various reasons. People get deployed and stationed here, and then they get deployed and stationed somewhere else. People get voted in here, and they bring new jobs, and then they get voted out, and they lose jobs. There's this coming and going, this constant flux of people moving in and out, and so there's no surprise that there are changes in how we do things. Not all churches work that way, just so you know. The first church I preached in definitely was the exact opposite. If this church is a revolving door, that thing was a monument. The same guy, Jack, ever since the war ended, was the one who unlocked the building, turned on the sound equipment, made sure communion was prepared, took it to the nursing homes, and did that until the day he died. And I remember the day he died, and I remember the Sunday afterwards when we all showed up and the church was locked and nobody knew where the key was. We had to call Jack's sister and ask where the key was, and she didn't know either. Because we didn't know how to turn on the AV system because Jack was gone, because we didn't know how to function because Jack was gone. And Tommy still leads singing in that church, the same rotation that he's always singing. I know for a fact that this Sunday he's singing the song he always does on the second Sunday of the month. I know that Jackie still says the same prayers before communion. Nothing ever changes there. There's never a vacant spot on that church's organizational chart unless somebody dies. This church is not that church. All churches are different. One of the great things about this church is the constant coming and going of people. And so there's vacancies to fill because life is changing so fast around you. You have the jobs that you have. You know this. You know what I'm saying is true. Life is always changing so quickly here. That's why there's vacancies here. Opportunities for us to fill in some blanks and catch up a little bit. Several of those roles are vacant, not because there's no interest, but because we're just in a season of listening and trying to fill in some blanks. In that space, there's a real opportunity here for people with gifts of hospitality, of organization, of noticing others, to step into roles where the light of Christ's welcome can shine just a little brighter. Not every opportunity is for every person. Salt does not all taste the same. Apparently, pink Himalayan salt is better than the other salts. At least that's what the price tag at Costco says. Light doesn't shine in only one color, has many different spectrums. Some of you come alive when you're greeting people at the door because you're extroverts and you thrive on that stuff. Some of us don't. Some of us prefer to organize a meal or make sure the kitchen is ready. Some of you thrive behind the scenes in spreadsheets and websites and fixing things that are broken. Some of you are drawn to prayer or teaching or encouraging others. And when Jesus says, "Let your light shine before others so they may see your good works and give glory to your Father," he's not asking you to become someone else. He's inviting you to let the grace that you already received show up in concrete ways that bless others. To be what you are, where you are, but to purpose that for God's kingdom. This is the life of faith that is not primarily about what we accomplish. This is about how Christ is present among us. So I want to invite you all very simply to take that leadership document home and put it somewhere where you're going to look at it throughout the week. I don't need you to study it. Just set it down at your breakfast table or wherever the spot is that you need to put it, where you'll notice it and check out a word or two every so often, just kind of as a reminder, placeholder. Set it down, put it somewhere you'll see it, and pray over it. I need you to ask a few questions. Where might my gifts, my energy, my season of life connect with what's going on at this church? And if a particular area tugs at you, reach out to one of the elders, or to me, or to the deacon or coordinator in that area, or any one of the other names you find on the sheet. There's no arm twisting here. I don't want to guilt you at all. This is not some sort of shakedown. It's just an invitation. Because when a church lives this way, whenever it receives its identity from Christ, organizing its life to serve inviting each person to share in that, it begins to look a lot like what Jesus is describing here, a city on a hill that cannot be hid, a life full of light that gives light to all in the house and to those around them. All of this, these strong words from Christ, this picture of our shared life, these invitations to serve, could still feel like a lot if we forget where that light comes from. I know for a fact that some of the names on this list feel particularly weighed down by all the things that they're doing. This, I say this not to guilt you, but so that you can appreciate somebody like Lloyd and Lance and your deacons. If you see a vacant spot on that list, the name in that category above that vacant spot is currently doing all of those things the best they can and trying to keep up with it. And I know for those people, this list can feel dim. And I don't want you to do that either. Because this light is not something we produce. We merely reflect it. We reflect the light of the Christ in this world. We don't produce it. We don't create it. We pass it on. When Jesus calls us the light of the world, he's not asking us to manufacture that light out of our own strength. Light is something we receive from him. Saltiness is something we generate by faith, not willpower. It's something that he restores and renews as we stay close. Our life together does not begin with our plans or our efforts or organizational charts. It begins with the presence of Christ sitting down with us, calling us blessed, and saying, "You're already salt and light. You're doing a great job." So as you listen for where you might fit into this shared work, whether that's an engagement or missions or formation or benevolence or caring for the building, don't start with your calendar and let that dictate what you can and cannot do. Don't start with your capacity. Start with the one who already named you as blessed. Remember that before you ever step into a role, you are already blessed, already called salt, already called light, simply because his kingdom has come near to you. And as we go from here, I want to invite you to carry three simple questions into the week. Lord, where do you want your light to shine in me? Where do you want your light to shine through this church? And where are you inviting me to join what you're already doing? Bring your gratitude for the ways you already serve. Bring your curiosity about new possibilities. Bring your weariness about your limits too. And lay all of that before Christ in prayer, trusting that he knows what he's calling to you in your life. We do not go out from this place as people trying to prove ourselves. We go from here as a people that have already been named salt, light, blessed. May his spirit keep our life flavorful and our witness bright, so that in all we do, seen and unseen, others may catch a glimpse of our Father in heaven and give glory to him. Let's stand and sing.